and welcome to the program. If you've been with us before, you will know that we're using the text Mind Training Like the Rays of the Sun by Namkar Pal as the basis of an ongoing discussion for these programs. The text is obviously in the Buddhist mind training tradition, in which over time we transform our mind so that it becomes moral and serviceable on the spiritual path. If most of us were to pay close attention to our internal world at present, we will find a somewhat chaotic, egocentric environment which drives us to follow one impulse to another without rest. Even our dreams are filled with urges, impulses, emotions, and desires that we have very little control over and which we allow to dictate to us as though they were our masters. The Buddha said that if we want to be free from the endless rollercoaster ride fueled by all these internal forces, we have to take control of the mind. These internal forces are known to us as the delusions or afflictive emotions, and together with the imprints and habits they leave on our minds, they're the cause of all our discomforts and sufferings. As I said, to stop them dominating our experiences and causing all our miseries, we have to control the mind and not let these delusions rule it. And that is where mind training comes in. When you get a new puppy, you can, of course, just let it have its own way and grow up according to its instincts. You might then have a carefree pet, but you will also have to stock up on lots of carpet cleaner and be prepared to deal with angry neighbors who do not care one little bit for your out-of-control pooch. However, if you start training the puppy soon after it comes to live with you, it will in time learn not to leave stinky surprises on your pristine carpet and be, if not kind, at least respectful of your neighbors. Our mind is very much the same. It's easy to leave it to its own devices, but we should know from bitter experience that it will run amok and lead us into many stinky and difficult situations. It will also easily cause lots of mayhem with those who are our neighbors in such situations. In other words, we will have plenty to complain about, and in our distress, we'll probably blame our upset on everything except the one agent provocateur that is behind it all. So we have to take this mind in hand and train it until it becomes subservient to our designs rather than we to its. Buddhist psychology has many techniques to train the mind, among which are those described in the text, The Seven-Point Mind Training by Geshe Chikawa. Mind Training Like the Rays of the Sun is a commentary on this text, and we have reached the section on the precepts of mind training, which is presented in a series of slogans. Last time, we started discussing the slogan, Guard both at the cost of your life. And if you were with us, you may remember it refers to maintaining precepts, and especially the mind training precepts, even if it means losing your life. In one of the movies about the Chinese invasion of Tibet, I think it was Martin Scorsese's Kundun, there's a scene of the communist Chinese soldiers forcing a Tibetan student to hold a pistol to the head of his teacher and pulling the trigger. Now, put yourself in a similar situation as that student. Against all your precepts, you're given the choice to kill someone close to you or you will be tortured to death. What will you do? What will you do if the person you have to kill is a stranger to you? And what if that person is your enemy? Of course, Buddhist psychology also trains us to give up even the idea of an enemy. But it's very hard for us ordinary people not to like some and dislike others. An equanimous mind only comes about after much introspection and training. So it's easy to say this life is short and coming lives are long and many. Give up this life for the well-being of what is to come. But when the threat to this life is present and vivid, the fear enormous, it takes great courage to yield what we truly guard as most precious to us, our life. That is why we need to train the mind over time, maybe a long time, to truly accept something like the slogan. I have told a story before about a monk and a samurai general in ancient Japan. Here it is again, as an example for us, taken from the website www.innerdirections.org. During the civil wars in feudal Japan, an invading army would quickly sweep into a town and take control. In one particular village, everyone fled just before the army arrived, everyone except the Zen master. Curious about this old fellow, the general went to the temple to see for himself what kind of man this master was. When he wasn't treated with the deference and submissiveness to which he was accustomed, the general burst into anger. "You fool," he shouted as he reached for his sword. "Don't you realize you are standing before a man who could run you through without blinking an eye?" But despite the threat, the master seemed unmoved. "And do you realize," the master replied calmly, "that you were standing before a man who can be run through without blinking an eye?" Well, are we like everyone who fled, or like the master who refused to give in? At least for me, it is hard to say, never having been asked to give up my life for the sake of a precept, even though I know intellectually how much greater the value of a kept precept is compared to the value of one short life. But now, anyway, before we go deeper into this, let's think about motivation for the program as we usually do. I hope our motivation can be bodhicitta, the intention to attain enlightenment for the sake of all beings. But failing that, for oneself, to attain liberation from all suffering. Any motivation other than these two is really not worth it, because it will just contribute to the continuation of samsara and its various sufferings. So whether you want to attain enlightenment for all beings, including yourself, or just yourself alone, please direct the positive energy from the program to your purpose. Thank you. Now let's hear what Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche has to say about the slogan in his book, Enlightened Courage. He translates the slogan as, "Even if it costs your life, defend the two." And he writes, "This refers in general to the vows of the Srivakayana, Mahayana, and Vajrayana, and particularly to the special vows of mind training. The vows of the mind training are to give victory and benefit to others, and to take all loss and failure, especially that of our enemies, upon ourselves. If we act accordingly, the mind training will take effect. On the other hand, if we fail to practice these two vows, we will achieve neither the short-term benefit of happiness in this life and rebirth in the realms of human beings or of gods, nor the long-term benefit of rebirth in a pure field. We should therefore observe these vows at all costs, just as we guard our eyes from thorns when we are walking through the woods." And now let's remember what His Holiness the Dalai Lama has said about giving victory to others and taking defeat on to oneself. Here he is at a teaching on the 8 verses of mind training in New Delhi in 1982. You can find it on www.bodhicitta.net. He says, "If someone insults, abuses, and criticizes us, saying that we are incompetent and don't know how to do anything and so forth, we're likely to get very angry and contradict what the person has said. We should not react in this way. Instead, with humility and tolerance, we should accept what has been said. Where it says that we should accept defeat and offer the victory to others, we have to differentiate two kinds of situation. If on the one hand we are obsessed with our own welfare and very selfishly motivated, we should accept defeat and offer victory to the other, even if our life is at stake. But if, on the other hand, the situation is such that the welfare of others is at stake, we have to work very hard and fight for the rights of others and not to accept the loss at all." One of the 46 secondary vows of a bodhisattva refers to a situation in which someone is doing something very harmful and you have to use forceful means or whatever else is necessary to stop that person's actions immediately. If you don't, you have transgressed that commitment. It might appear that this precept and the fifth stanza, which says that one must accept defeat and give the victory to others, are contradictory, but they're not. The Bodhisattva precept deals with a situation in which one's prime concern is the welfare of others. If someone is doing something extremely harmful and dangerous, it is wrong not to take strong measures to stop it if necessary. Nowadays, in very competitive societies, strong defensive or similar actions are often required. The motivation for these should not be selfish concern, but extensive feelings of kindness and compassion towards others. If we act out of such feelings to save others from creating negative karma, this is entirely correct. His Holiness was then asked, "In whose judgment do we trust in deciding to take strong action? Can we rely on our own perception of the world?" And he answers, "That's complicated. When you consider taking the loss upon yourself, you have to see whether giving the victory to others is going to benefit them ultimately or only temporarily. You also have to consider the effect that taking the loss upon yourself will have on your power or ability to help others in the future. It is also possible that by doing something that is harmful to others now, you create a great deal of merit that will enable you to do things vastly beneficial for others in the long run. This is another factor you have to take into account. As it says in the Bodhicaryavatara, you have to examine both superficially and deeply whether the benefits of doing a prohibited action outweigh the shortcomings. At times, when it's difficult to tell, you should check your motivation." And the Siksha Samuchaya, Shantideva says that the benefits of an action done with bodhicitta motivation outweigh the negativities of doing it without such a motivation. Because it's sometimes very difficult, yet very important, to see the dividing line between what to do and what not to do, you should study the texts that explain such things. In lower texts, it will say that certain actions are prohibited, while in higher ones, it will say that those same actions are allowed. The more you know about all of this, the easier it will be to decide what to do in any situation. And then there's a very nice teaching by Dr. Alex Berzin on taking the defeat on oneself and giving victory to others. I have mentioned it in one of the programs we did on the 8 verses of mind training, but that was quite a long time ago now, so let's visit it again. You can find it on studybuddhism.com, where Dr. Berzin speaks on the text, the 8 verses of mind training. He says, "May I accept the loss upon myself and offer the victory to others?" This can be understood on, of course, many different levels. We can understand this, for instance, if we're in an argument. Or here saying, when others out of envy treat me unfairly and scold me and insult me and so on, rather than becoming very defensive about it, rather than getting all upset about it, if we just say, "Well, thank you for pointing this out to me." And so, if somebody really criticizes us and so on, just offer them the victory. In other words, that's the end of the whole argument, the whole discussion. Especially if somebody is really very, very emotionally disturbed, there's no point in arguing with them. He then goes on to ask if this means we just let everybody slap us around. And he says, "Do we let China take our country, Tibet? This type of thing." And that is not necessarily what is meant here. But I think that we really need to differentiate when there's some sort of effect that we can have on the situation to change it. Or is it just going to make things worse? So you look at the situation of Tibet, for instance. There's no way that a few million Tibetans can militarily overcome 1.2 billion Chinese. And so that's pointless to try to do that. So you give the victory to others. From the point of view of the policy of His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Dr. Berzin points out that the reality is that Tibet needs to depend very much on China. So with that acknowledgement, what can one realistically do to make the Tibetan situation better? His Holiness would take on the loss of the independence of the country, thus giving victory to the Chinese, but still advocate for an autonomous status and, in certain areas, self-governance. Says Dr. Berzin, "One has to see what's realistic and what's not realistic." He then tells a story of how he gave some money to a friend to buy something on his behalf, but the friend spent the money on himself and has no resources to repay it. "What is the way of dealing with that?" asks Dr. Berzin. "Are you constantly going to be angry with a person and constantly make yourself sick with anger? Or just say, 'Have it, it's yours.' It's like when somebody steals something from your house. You're never going to get it back, and so wish the other person enjoy it. Also, when you look at the teachings on karma, and this was very, very helpful, I found personally with this friend who took his money, that it says, if you really think of the other person, what are some of the factors that make the karmic consequences heavier for a particular negative action? And it says, the more suffering you cause to the other person, the heavier the consequences are for yourself. And so, if I was really angry and really upset about my friend taking this money, then it would just make the karmic consequences much worse for my friend, whom I actually liked. And so, by not getting angry, by saying, okay, in my mind, enjoy the money, it's gone, it doesn't make that a huge difference in my life, then at least I could try to make the karmic consequences on him less, rather than wanting revenge and for him to suffer. So, this is a way of applying this accept the loss on oneself and give the victory to others. That's especially applicable when we are in an argument with somebody and they say something really ridiculous and they're not going to listen to what we say. Then there's no point in arguing. Let them win and then they go away. So, as I said, there are many levels to understand this give the victory to others. Let them have the larger piece of cake and take the loss on ourselves. We take the smaller piece. It says we can also use the situation in which envious people say nasty things about us to practice patience and give the victory to others. And he quotes verse 53 from chapter 6 of Shantideva's Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. Insults, cruel language, and defaming words don't hurt my body. So why, O mind, do you become so enraged? If they want to say something stupid, let them say something stupid, Dr. Berzin says. Give the victory to others. No reason to become enraged. And words don't hurt me. One way of dealing with a situation when others say nasty things to us and so on, and one way of taking the loss on ourselves and giving the victory to others, is to think that this has come from my own negative karma, from the negative things that I've done in the past. So I can accept this and give the victories to others, not blame them. And then he quotes Dhamma Rakshita's text, Wheel of Sharp Weapons. When we hear only language that is foul and abusive, this is the wheel of sharp weapons, returning full circle upon us from the wrongs we have done. Till now, we have said many things without thinking. We have slandered and caused many friendships to end. Hereafter, let's censure all thoughtless remarks. And Dr. Berzin comments, in other words, if people are saying nasty things to us and abusing us and so on, this comes from, in the past, us saying nasty things about others and causing friendships and close relations to part. And so if that's the case, then in order to overcome that, to break the karmic circle, this wheel of sharp weapons coming back to us, we need to really watch what we say and cut off any thoughtless remarks, saying stupid things and nasty things to others. Then Dhamma Rakshita again, verse 18, when unjustly we are blamed for the misdeeds of others and are falsely accused of flaws that we lack and are always the object of verbal abuse, this is the wheel of sharp weapons returning full circle upon us from wrongs we have done. Till now, we've despised and belittled our gurus. Hereafter, let's never accuse others falsely, but give them full credit for virtues they have. And Dr. Berzin says, so when we're accused of things that we haven't done, or blamed of things, say we have mistakes that we don't actually have, this is a result of having ourselves done that to others. Let's say with our spiritual teachers, saying they don't have good qualities and belittling them, and accusing others falsely of things which are not the case. And so it's important to counter that, to, as it says here, give them full credit for the positive things that they have, praise them, and so on, even if we might not particularly like the person. I mean, that's not referring to our guru. And then, verse 21, when others find fault with whatever we're doing, and people seem eager to blame only us, this is the wheel of sharp weapons returning full circle upon us from wrongs we have done. Till now, we've been shameless, not caring about others. We've thought that our deeds didn't matter at all. Hereafter, let's stop our offensive behavior. Dr. Berzin comments, so when people are finding fault with everything that we do, then this is the karmic result of our not caring about what we do and the effect that it has on others. As it says here that our deeds didn't matter at all, so there's always going to be somebody to blame us, to find fault with what we're doing. So in the future, we have to stop this type of offensive behavior of just acting in a vacuum, as if nobody else was around and it didn't affect anyone. So this is a very helpful way to deal with this type of situation of how do we accept the loss on ourselves and give the victory to others, is to see what are the karmic causes for this happening when others, as it says here, scold us and insult us and treat us unfairly and so on, and stop that in our behavior. He then points out another way of understanding accepting defeat or loss on oneself and offering the victory to others. We give ourselves to others. He says, we lose in a sense ourselves, serving ourselves. We give the victory to others in the sense that we serve them. And he turns once more to Shantideva with verses 10 to 15 from chapter 3 of the Guided Through the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. To fulfill the aims of all limited beings, I give without sense of a loss my body and likewise my pleasures and all my positive forces of the three times. Giving everything away brings release with nirvana, and my mind is aimed for realizing nirvana. As giving away all comes together with death, it's best to give now to limited beings. Having given this body to all those with limited bodies to do with as they like, it's up to them to do with what they want. Let them kill it, revile it, always beat it, or whatever. Let them toy with my body, make it into a source of ridicule or a joke. Having given away this body of mine, for what should I hold it dear? Let them do whatever to my body, so long as it doesn't cause them harm. But may anything focused on me never turn out to be meaningless. If anyone having focused on me develops an angry or negative mind, may that always turn into a cause for fulfilling all of his or her aims. Dr. Berzin comments, so when people have these unkind thoughts and get angry with us and insult us and so on, accept the loss on ourselves and wish for them, may this be a cause for fulfilling all of your aims. When somebody does something negative towards us, we have a karmic relation with this person, which came from the past. And as we were saying from the Wheel of Sharp Weapons, we've undoubtedly said something negative to them before. He says that though we have a karmic connection with this person, it is negative, and for our own and their good, we need to change the flavor of this connection. Therefore, instead of being nasty back at them, which could lead to the negative connection going on for lifetimes, we have to develop the intention, may this interaction with me turn into a cause for fulfilling all of his or her aims. And he says, in other words, by wishing them well, rather than wishing them something terrible, you change the whole structure of that relationship. And he then quotes verse 16 of chapter 3 of Shantideva's text. And may everyone who speaks badly of me or does something else that's of harm or likewise hurls ridicule at me, become someone with the fortune for a purified state, and says, it's like what I was explaining with this friend of mine who used the money that I gave him in order to build something for me, but he used it for himself. Rather than getting angry with him, may you enjoy this, I'm not going to get angry with you. By turning it into a gift in my mind, then, may I be able to give you even more and bring you to a state of enlightenment. So that's why it says, may it never turn out to be meaningless for anyone to be focused for any time on me. Anybody who has a relation, as it says. Chenrezig has even blessed his name, so that if people just hear his name, they become uplifted. So anybody who sees me, anybody who reads anything that I've written, anybody who hears my name, may it inspire them, may it not be meaningless that they encounter me. A very wonderful prayer. May I have some positive influence on everybody whom I meet, even if they meet me with a negative intent. And then he quotes verses 12 to 14 of Togme Zangpo's 37 Bodhisattva practices, which goes like this. A Bodhisattva's practice is, even if someone under the power of great desire steals or causes other to steal all our wealth, to dedicate to him our bodies, resources, and constructive actions of the three times. A Bodhisattva's practice is, even if while we haven't the slightest fault ourselves, someone were to chop off our heads, to accept on ourselves his negative consequences through the power of compassion. A Bodhisattva's practice is, even if someone were to publicize throughout the 1,000,000,000,000,000 worlds all kinds of unpleasant things about us, to speak in return about his good qualities with an attitude of love. And then verse 16, a Bodhisattva's practice is, even if a person whom we've taken care of, cherishing him like our own child, were to regard us as his enemy, to have special affection for him, like a mother towards her child stricken with an illness. And he says, so if our child is sick and says all sorts of crazy things and he's really cranky and so on, then of course we would have even more love for the child, because we understand that the child is sick and acting like this because he's sick or overtired or whatever. And so similarly, when others whom we've raised like a child, in other words, we've been kind to them like that, even if they're very, very nasty to us, that is very helpful to think of them like our sick child, that now they're sick, suffering from this disturbing emotion, and therefore to have more concern and more taking care of them rather than getting angry. We don't get angry with our child for getting sick. So that is a teaching from Dr. Alex Berzin on how we can train to keep the precepts of mind training so that eventually we can hold them more dear than our life. But now our time is once again up and we have to say farewell. Thanks for being with the program today. And as you go, please dedicate all the positive potential to gaining enlightenment for all beings. Go well, go safely, go in peace.